Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the webinar today. Our guest host is the founder of Clarity Consulting and author of The Clarity Compass. See more clearly, have creative conversations, live the life you want. The Clarity Compass is a cognitive framework that our host has developed over 30 years as an executive coach, and it's designed to help you discover your blind spots, move through them, and broaden your perspective so you can be freer, happier, and more effective. Please welcome the author of The Clarity Compass, Dr. Britt Paulson.
Welcome to Embracing Uncertainty. I'm excited about today's talk because to me it really is an invitation to possibility, imagination, and creating a whole new life in either entirely or in specific areas. But to do that, we have to be willing to embrace uncertainty. What you're seeing in front of you now is the Clarity Compass. It's a tool that I created because even 35 years ago, I was a management consultant and I just found the world overwhelming. It was just too much for me. It was too chaotic. And I thought, I just need to find a way to organize the world better. And this tool has come in handy for me and many of my clients because the world's continuing to get more chaotic and more ambiguous. There's just more information out there to manage. So the basics of the tool, it gets actually more and more involved the more you work with it. I've done year-long programs on the tool. But the basic of it is, you start off with your intention. And so getting really clear on what is my intention? What do I want? How do I create that vision of the outcome I want? And then following that red line is the clearer I can be on my intention, then the more focused I am on my actions and creating more and more specific actions, making requests, so forth. But the main idea is just, first of all, getting clear on my intentions and then having that flow naturally into the actions and activities that I do every day. The second polarity there is facts versus stories. So again, there's all this information coming at us, and we tend to make up a lot of stories about the world. And separating out that this is an observable fact versus this is a story that I'm making up or an internal experience that I'm having is another way to kind of ground into the facts and get clear on my stories and then even upgrade the stories that I'm telling. And we're going to see how this model works with a case study. So the things that I'm inviting you to take away today is, first, getting even clearer on how as a human being I'm clinging to certainty. It's like it's just a part of the human being. I'm just naturally gravitating toward, I just want to be certain, want to be certain, want to be certain. And the second piece to that is that actually some of that certainty is coming from what I'm calling reality maps. And I don't actually see the world as it is. I experience the world based on my version of it. That's what I call reality maps. Like in here, I have a map of reality. And most of us operate from a place of like, I know what's going on. I have a sense of reality. I'm looking around. I know reality. But one of the things that helps to have a little bit of uncertainty, be present with uncertainty, is that like maybe my reality maps aren't 100% accurate. And maybe some of the challenges that I'm having come from the lack of accuracy in my reality maps. I think I'm dealing with reality, but actually I'm dealing with an incorrect reality map. And last piece here is that as I become more aware of my blind spots, and they are at that point no longer blind spots, then I'm dealing with reality more on its own terms. And I can do that by embracing uncertainty. I can, there's a aspect of imagination that we're talking about here that I can step further into. So briefly, you know, my story around this is that when I was young, I was actually an accounting major. And I did that because assets equal liabilities plus capital and debits equal credits. And I wanted certainty. I wanted control in my life. And just to be a little bit personal, I was at a sales conference. I took a job one summer selling books door to door, and I was at a sales conference. And I walked by a guy's door, and I heard him say, he's reading from Og Mandino's book, The Greatest Salesman in the World. And he was reading, I am not a sheep, I am a lion. And it, for some reason, it just impacted me in a way that I started to think, wow, I can learn things, I can be smarter, I can get more information, I can learn some skills, but that metaphor of being a lion versus a sheep just kind of struck me as I can show up differently. I can have a different disposition. I can have a whole different orientation to the world. Because if I, and this is how I processed it as a young man, is if I'm processing the world, if my reality map is that I'm a sheep, I'm going to process the whole world differently than if I've got some, you know, the heart of a lion, some courage of the lion, some strength of the lion. Then I'm going to be, if I see myself differently, I'm going to orient differently to the world. And that's what this talk is about, is if I'm certain I'm one thing, that's limiting me from being something else that might be a better possibility for me. And from that point, you know, I did get my degree in accounting and worked in it a little bit, but eventually I moved into psychology, got my PhD in Jungian psychology, working with archetypes, the unconscious. And my dissertation is actually on images, imagination, innovation, creativity, and freeing ourselves to new possibilities. And that's why I'm excited about sharing this with you today, because this is the work I do every day with clients and help open them up to new ways of being effective, but also being happier. And that's my hope for you. Just to kind of get in touch with ways that you might be overly certain is to think of a time when you were certain about someone else's thinking this or doing this or acting this way, and then later I was wrong. And to be thinking, oh, I was so certain about that. And again, this talk isn't about not being confident, because I do think there's a place and importance in terms of marching forward with confidence. But if I'm marching forward with confidence, there's also another part of me. It's like, okay, where might I be overly certain, driving over people, creating conflicts for myself and others? So it's a balance between keeping my confidence, but then finding the places where I might be overly certain and it's harming me and others. So certainty is blocks possibility. Not all the time, but that's what we're trying to discover. Where is it blocking possibility? I like this quote, the quest for certainty blocks the search for meaning. Uncertainty is the very condition to impel man to unfold his powers or her powers. I like that quote. I like actually Einstein's is similar to this, is that imagination is more important than knowledge. And that's what this, so much of this talk is about is like, rather than be fixed on knowledge that I think is true, how can I imagine new possibilities for myself and others? I mentioned a case study. So this is using the clarity compass that I shared with you earlier. And I'll go slow through this slide because I really want to get a sense of Irwin here, our case study. And so the idea is that I mentioned before, intentions to actions, and facts to stories, or facts versus stories. And so that's what Irwin did. And Irwin said, okay, I have a situation I want to work with. I'm going to use the clarity compass. And so what are my intentions? Okay, my primary intention here is I want to be recognized as a leader by my boss, Bill. Bill is actually the owner and founder of the company. And so kind of the speed compass is called speed compass because it's less complex than the Clarity Compass worksheet that's actually pretty involved and has different subcategories and so forth. So this is the simplest version that I'm sticking with here. So the next thing Irwin says, okay, well, the action is, you know, if I really want to be recognized with him, my sense of Bill is that I have to follow his directions so that what I'm doing is consistent with what he wants. And the reason I am looking at that in the first place is that he created outlines. Now under the facts is I observed him. The facts are observable. I observed him creating outlines for 7 out of 8 of my last proposals. So Irwin creates proposals, but his boss, Bill, the owner of the company, made outlines in fair detail of what Irwin should present. And then the story that Irwin is having is, so this isn't observable, it's just kind of what he's thinking in his head, is that if I don't do projects exactly the way that Bill wants me to, he's going to think it's wrong. He's going to see that I've failed. So I need to do it exactly as he's wanting. Now, this next section is actually extremely difficult, where it says other as Bill. Is in this, I'm trying to get into the other person's perspective. So I'm using the Clarity Compass to try to step into their perspective as best I can and truly think the way that they're thinking as best as I can guess at it. And I call it empathetic guessing. And if you're doing this and you're thinking, well, I'm the best and I'm right and everybody else is wrong, then you're probably not stepping in their shoes fully, because most people aren't thinking everybody else is wrong, I'm right, I'm the best. So there's usually a place as you're beginning being empathetic, there's some reason that's fairly reasonable for what they're doing. And if you can access that, then it gives you more access to how they're thinking and how they might be able to think differently and engage differently with you. So here as Irwin, as others Bill, he's Bill now. So I'm helping, so he's thinking, Bill's thinking, oh, my intention is to help Irwin out by giving him detailed instructions. You know, by if I spend time with him, giving him these detailed instructions, you know, it can help him be successful. So that's his action. I'm spending time, I'm giving him instructions. Intention is to help out, action is to give him the instructions. The fact that Bill might be citing is that he's assigning projects with suggested categories. He's seeing him do that, and it is setting him up for success. And the story is, by closely coaching folks, I create winners. So again, as Irwin's stepping into Bill's shoes as best he can, he's thinking that I, Bill, am helping my employees out. And so this, just doing the Clarity Compass this far, helps Irwin get some access. So rather than just think he's controlling and I need to confront him on his being controlling, it's like, okay, he's got some good intentions. He's trying to help out. It gives an access to Bill that is not accusatory, but actually a place to begin to start some conversations with. And so that's the stage of this case study, where Irwin is already trying to step into Bill's shoes, trying to create some type of understanding from which he can have a better conversation. And we'll come back to this case study shortly. I want to talk about reality maps a little bit more. The definition is our internal representation of the external world. Just what I was saying before in terms of, here's the world out here, and I have some representation of it inside me. It's not a one-to-one correlation. It's just my best guess. We always operate from limited information. And a key piece here is that the world is too complex for our minds to comprehend. So there's a little bit of humility in today's exercise. So the idea is the world is way too complex. I can't manage all this complexity at some level in our brains. And so we develop heuristic or rules of thumb to try to understand and manage and navigate the world. But to begin to realize that my reality map, my best guess of reality, is limited. So in terms of understanding reality maps, we all have them. Nobody has an exact picture of the world in their head that they're going off of. We can't navigate the world without them, because it is our way of just kind of figuring out, well, who's on first, who's doing what. And And the reality maps are forming a function of taking the complex world and making sure we're not overloaded, because if we were trying to take in everything fully, it would be too much and we'd be immobilized. So the reality maps are necessary and helpful, but limited. That's why I like this diagram here. It shows not only the limited capacity, but also I want to add limited experience. So the old adage about the six blind men describing the elephant is, because they're each having a different experience, their reality of what this elephant is different. And so what this illustrates is how limited our reality maps are. So one, there's a limitation between our brains just can't hold all the information and figure it out. But then the second is that my experience are different than yours, that are different than the person next to you, the person you talked to yesterday. We all have the different experiences. So again, our reality maps are going to be different. And to some degree, that adds diversity and makes it interesting, but it also can create conflict because our reality maps aren't veridical or literal or accurate of the world. And then we don't always make the best decisions. So coming back to the case study, so again, this is Irwin's speed compass. Again, same exact thing as I shared before. But what I want to play with is this is his reality map that he's living from, that he wants to show up, he wants to lead, he wants to be recognized, but in the end, he's just able to just kind of do what he's told. And that's the reality that he's living in. Here, reality map number two, this is Bill's speed compass. So now we're introducing a whole new reality. So walking through this, I'm Bill now, not Irwin. I'm the owner of the company. And my intention is to be able to trust Irwin with projects. And so I need to ask him, I need to ask him to take more initiative. But the facts that I'm seeing is 99.9%, pretty much close to 100% of the time, he follows the instructions and he doesn't take any actions to move forward until I give him the instructions. So it's clear from the facts, those are facts, I'm watching that, he's not doing anything, I give him an outline, he does something. So that's the facts. The story I make up as I'm watching him is he seems eager to have the detailed instructions. In fact, if I don't give them to him, he seems anxious, as if I'm neglecting him. So actually, what I've learned from looking at the facts is that Irwin needs a lot of attention, a lot of direction by me, and if he doesn't get it, then he's going to be upset. But just as Irwin did, I want to step into Irwin's shoes. And as I do that, he thinks, Bill, am thinking that Irwin wants to be a star performer in the company because he said things to that effect. And he's also, as he hears him, he's seeing him take advantage. So the action, as I'm Bill, I'm thinking, Irwin's thinking that he needs to take advantage to listening to me, my instructions, when I provide good teaching moments. So Irwin's really, to succeed, he's needing to focus on me and what I'm telling him. That's probably what Irwin's thinking, is he's wanting to succeed through listening to me. The fact is that Irwin's probably saying, well, I deliver my projects on time to the specifications that Bill gives me 100% of the time. I follow directions well. So he's probably proud of himself for following the directions well. So again, you can see Bill stepping into Irwin's shoes as best as he can. And then the story that he has is, I can tell Bill really values me because he invests time in teaching and instructing me. So that as Bill, I'm thinking Irwin's really appreciating the time and energy instructions because it helps him to succeed. So you can see in the two reality maps, one, they're completely different realities, and two, why there might be some conflict. Because Irwin's getting frustrated because he's being micromanaged by Bill, and Bill's getting frustrated because Irwin's not taking the initiative. And if you look through your day and look closely enough, you'll see these same kind of mismatches of reality maps all the time. And Bill is at this point certain of these things, and Irwin is certain as well. And that certainty is creating greater conflict. So With reality maps, understanding why the conflict's there is basically we have simple basic assumptions. Most of them are unconscious. We're not analyzing every one of our assumptions that create a reality. Those assumptions help us to function moment to moment. And they're so embedded and usually they cross-reference each other. Usually our reality maps are pretty internally consistent. Otherwise, it creates cognitive dissonance. And the brain's like, that's not consistent. I need to reconcile that. And so they're pretty consistent. So changing means a major reorganization of thinking. And because of that, change is often emotionally disturbing. Because again, we want to minimize that cognitive dissonance. New information comes. Our first impulse is like, that's not fitting with my reality maps. It's creating cognitive dissonance. I'm anxious. And we typically reject it. I mean, it's just a natural part of my coaching practice, especially I've done 360 interviews with 9, 10, 15 people sometimes. I come back to a person and I'll say, hey, I've done these interviews and here's some feedback for you. And I say it in a nice and way that's easily accessible. But almost always the response is, no, Brett, you know, you don't understand. And they'll give me reasons why that's wrong. And so that's my job. Is to how do I work with the folks in a way that has them begin to move through this, where challenging some of their basic assumptions, where it's basically saying, yes, the example you're giving are true, but there's also another perspective that might be helpful for you to understand. And getting through this resistance is huge. I remember one client who was really like, no, you're wrong. And I just interviewed 12 people and everybody said the same thing. And at one point I said, do you think I'm making it up? And he paused. And because this feedback was particularly severe, he's like, no, I don't think you're making it up. And he actually staggered back to the car, not because he had been drinking, but because it was just so impact. His whole reality had to change to start assimilating some of this information. And I share that with you because some of the defenses we have against new information is because it's challenging our whole system here. So coming back to Irwin and Bill, is they had a conversation and got clearer on how each other were thinking. So Irwin went back to his speed compass as Bill, clarity compass for other. And he realized, oh, okay, here's what Bill's thinking now. I give Irwin extra guidance because Irwin wants me to. That his action needs to be, I spend time with Irwin because it shows that I'm really invested in his success. So you can see how Irwin's opening up to where he was so certain before it was just all about control. He was a bit right, and there's even more information there in terms of, okay, you know, that Bill's got some good intentions. He's thinking, actually, I'm wanting it. Not only does he think it's helpful, but he's thinking, I'm actually wanting it. And so the facts that Irwin's giving, if you hear that Bill's citing, is I give extra detail to Irwin because he needs and wants this extra input. And the story, again, that Bill has, and now Irwin's embracing it, is Irwin really wants this extra guidance. If I didn't do this, he wouldn't know how much I believe in his potential. So all this is to say that Irwin went from the original part, which is Bill's 100% controlling, to, okay, he thinks micromanaging is helpful. And now is actually he's trying to be helpful, particularly to me. So again, you can see Irwin's reality map slowly changing from the place of certainty where it's 100% control to there's some other things going on here. And each of these steps bring Irwin and Bill closer together rather than adversarial. Similarly, after the conversation, Bill goes back to his clarity compass and is like, okay, now I'm Irwin again. I've got new information. So my new clarity compass for other, as Irwin would say, I want Bill to believe that I can take initiative. So that's pretty similar to what he said before, but I want to be invited to offer my ideas on current projects and future projects. And then the fact that now as Irwin, I would be looking at is we have no process in place for me to offer my ideas to the management team on a regular basis. So that was a fact. There was no process. Irwin had mentioned that, and Bill's like, oh, okay, now I see that Irwin may want to have his own ideas, but there's no vehicle for that. And so now I'm seeing the story that Irwin would be saying is that he's interested in stepping up and taking a project from start to finish with minimal input from me, which is a huge turnaround for Bill, who was thinking that Irwin wasn't interested in it. So you can see both of their clarity compass, their reality maps, are coming closer and closer together and seeing the other person more clearly rather than being deeply entrenched in their original perspective. So you can see in this case study that the reality maps cause us to have blind spots. You can see where each, Irwin and Bill, each had ways of seeing that were just not inclusive of the perspective of the other person. And through the conversation, they opened up to filling in some of those blind spots. I like this cartoon because it really represents confirmation bias. So a number of these concepts are cognitive psychology, such as cognitive dissonance, confirmation bias. And the idea is that we're actually looking to confirm what we already believe. So if we see 100 things, we're going to pick out the 60 things that confirm what I already believe and reject the 40 that's like, and rationalize why that isn't true. Like I said, I'll give feedback to clients and they'll say, well, Britt, actually, that's not the case. And they'll give the evidence that is true, but not the whole picture. But that evidence they're providing is confirming what they're already thinking and keeping them stuck. In fact, I had a client whose husband said to her, for both of their growth, because I had to talk to both of them, and they said, yeah, if we keep fighting Britt on our limitations, he's going to let us have them. And I just thought it was a good phrase because they were arguing for their limitations. And there's a place for, it's like at some point, if you're not going to give them up, then you're just kind of stuck there. So this confirmation bias is really critical. So in terms of the blind spots in this case study, if you look at the dark print for Irwin, the blind spot that he had before was he wasn't really originally when he just did the clarity compass for himself, speed compass for himself. He was just like Bill's controlling. He's just about being right and wants to lead everything himself. But then, so he had a blind spot to where Bill really wanted him to succeed. And he started to play with that when he stepped into Clarity Compass for Other and furthered that by having the conversation with him and opened up to this next piece, which is Bill is trying to help me by giving me the support he thinks I want. But this next section, this gray section, is still a blind spot at this point in the story for Irwin, because he is hesitant to take initiative. Some of the things that were on Bill's speed compass were right. Bill was seeing something, and that's Irwin had a hesitation to take initiative. He didn't really have the thought process to be strategic, to be proactive. And so that was a huge blind spot that was kept in place because of his certainty about it's all about Bill being controlling. Similar with Bill. He didn't really realize that Irwin wanted to take initiative. That was a blind spot for him. He just thought he wants me to spoon feed him and that's what he wants. And then he thinks I want him to do it in a certain way. So notice the phrasing of that is that it was a blind spot at all that for Bill, because Bill didn't know that Irwin had that thought. But still how he's phrasing it is he thinks I want him to do it in a certain way. I don't. I just want to help him. But I was blind to the idea that he thinks I want to do it in a different way. Now I know that, and that now that I don't have that blind spot, I can actually engage with him and correct that. Bill's blind spots continue at this point to be that he actually is controlling. He does have ways that he just wants it to be, and he doesn't realize that, which actually suppresses some of the leadership in other people, that he really likes things done the way he wants. And so at this point in the story, he remains ignorant to or blind to those aspects of himself. So in this slide, I want to see the victory of opening up, letting go of some of the certainty that each of them had, but also see where there's still blind spots to be uncovered. Oops. So the Clarity Compass is a tool to help us to manage and leverage uncertainty and become conscious to our blind spots. So again, that's the model, intentions to actions, facts versus stories. And we can use it in breakthroughs in relationships, professional as well as personal. But also just even within ourselves, how do I kind of sort out what are my intentions? How do I play with that? Okay, what are the actions I need to do if those are clearly my real intentions? And how do I start breaking out facts versus stories? For those of you who are interested in a more complex worksheet, I wanted to at least have this slide up here, www.claritycompassconsulting.com/worksheet. It's not just a speed compass, but actually gives subcategories like for intentions, there's scope, there's vision of the outline, there's deeper wants, really looking at my deeper wants, maybe when I do for other, looking at their deeper wants. So it's a little more complex. For those of you who are interested, just wanted to have that be available to you. But where I wanted to go here is talk about imagination. Because there's something freed as we let go of our certainty about how we are, how others are. There's a rigidity that each of us have that's so part of our reality maps. It's like the air we're breathing, the fish not knowing that it's in water, where it doesn't pay attention to these things. So there's a rigidity that each of us has that locks us up and confines our imagination. And so I'm kind of being depressing in this in terms of saying, if you want to have imagination, you have to really realize how rigid and certain we are. So I apologize for that. At the same time, I'm excited because as we realize some of our rigidity, we can let go of it and it frees up our mind to have new possibilities for our lives and for our engagement with other people. So I'm starting to wrap up here with this, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this slide that's the same as the one I shared with before, except for the red highlights. Because this story with Irwin and Bill continued to evolve as they began to start realizing these other grayed out blind spots, places where they were rigid. You know, where Irwin started to realize it's not all Bill being controlling, but he actually let go of his certainty that it was about Bill, started to imagine ways that he could show up differently. And I think that's a key piece. He began to imagine where he could take more initiative. He began to imagine where he could be more strategic, where he could be more proactive. And that had him showing up more powerfully as a leader. It changed him from a follower, which is nothing wrong with that, but he wanted to lead in the company. But it shifted him from a follower to somebody who was taking more initiative, seeing things more strategically, being more proactive. Similar with Bill, and it was probably more painful for Bill because Bill was like, yeah, I'm not controlling. Yeah, you know, I'm flexible in how we do things. And it was painful for Bill to wake up to that by two things. One, continuing to work with his own clarity compasses, but also in continued engagement with Irwin. He began to realize, no, actually, I wanted it this way, and the way that Irwin did it was okay. You know, it was actually in some cases better. And so it was painful for Bill to realize how controlling he was. But as he did, I always think of this as you cut it in half. You know, if this is the ideal state and this is where you are, you cut it in half, you cut it in half, cut it in half, cut it in half, cut it in half. There's always another half to cut. So the current state is actually that Irwin is looking to take over the company as Bill's wanting to spend more time on a boat. So it's actually a very exciting outcome. The reality is there's ways that Irwin still needs to be definitely more strategic. And there's ways that Bill is still more controlling. They still have some of these legacy issues. But as they've cut it in half, they've become far more effective. I mean, even Bill's spending more time out on a boat is related to his willingness to let go of some things and not have it be his way. So it's a bright retirement for Bill. And same thing for Irwin. As he has stepped into taking risks, and I think that's if we use this case study to play with this, is there's something that feels risky. The certainty gives the illusion of being risk-free while it's actually making things more risky for us. So if we're willing to let go of that certainty and have the experience of feeling at greater risk, ultimately being less at risk, then we can step into new ways of being that are more productive. And that's the success of Irwin, because as he was initiating more, it was more uncomfortable, but he was seeing different results. And then he'd be more strategic, and it would be a little uncomfortable for him to think kind of out of the box there. But again, it was self-reinforcing. It was scary, but self-reinforcing, and where now he's really the true leader of the company. And so that's what I want to be inviting you to, is to be playing with the ideas, where am I clinging to my certainty? Because my sense is that as you begin to let go of that certainty and allow your imagination to open up and open up to new possibilities, there can be ways that your life changes that are currently unimaginable. So that's the essence of this time together, is embracing the uncertainty and opening up to new possibilities for your life. I just want to thank you for the time you've taken to listen to this seminar. Feel free to reach out with any questions, comments, feedback to me. I like to try to be open to my own certainties that I can open up to. So thank you again, and I hope you've enjoyed this, and more importantly, find it useful.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders, because you know I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?